I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, you hear it all the time. Every vote counts, but it's not just a saying. Literally every vote counts, and the Commissioner of Public Lands race is proving that. Plus, as Bob Ferguson claims to be protecting communities from violent predators, residents of Spokane are living next door to one of the worst. And a horrible jobs report could not come at a worse time for Democrats. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just five tiny dollars a month, and we sure would appreciate it. You can sign up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. 51 votes. 51 votes could be the difference between Republicans taking back one statewide office in the entire on the entire West Coast or not doing it. And 51 votes appears to be what's going to potentially keep that from happening. I want to get to that coming up in a moment. I'm not trying to blame and shame. Or am I? I might be a little bit. Before that, I want to let you guys know we do have an event coming up this weekend at the Merton Ranch in Toledo, Washington. We're going to be there for the rally at the ranch. You're going to be able to hear from multiple candidates for elected office in Washington. And the featured speaker is Dave Reichert, a candidate for governor of Washington State. Bring your lawn chair. You know the drill. Nicole and I will be there. Bring your lawn chair. We'd love to see you in Toledo on Saturday at the Merton Ranch. Starts at 6 p.m. Should be a blast.
Food trucks.
Candidates. Us. What more do you need? So I know we do a lot of events up this way, so it'll be great to get down to Toledo. So I'll have that across social media as well. All right, 51 votes. Let's dive into this. It's been a wild ride in the Commissioner of Public Lands race, but it does prove, you know, we say every vote counts. Man, get your ballot in. Every vote counts. But it does. And sometimes there are races that are this close, and you don't want to, what I would say leading up to November is none of us want to get to November, the day after the election, and wake up and realize once results are finalized that, like, Dave Reichert loses to Bob Ferguson by 10 or something. I don't even know how I could mentally cope with that. So let's talk about the Commissioner of Public Lands race. We'll look at it in two ways, both with percentages and individual votes. So Jamie Herrera Butler will be advancing to the November election. I don't think that's been in doubt. She's a Republican. The question was whether a crowded Democratic field was going to result in two Republicans moving forward, which would of course mean that Republicans would take back that office. But Dave Up the Grove has managed, as the final ballots were counted yesterday, to just squeak out ahead of Sue Keel Peterson. Yesterday was crazy. They'd been going back and forth a little bit. At some point, Sue Keel Peterson was up just a handful of votes. But the last remaining ballots to be counted in King County just didn't go in her direction. And again, we're talking about 51 votes. 396,300 for Dave Up the Grove and 396,249 for Sue Keel Peterson. So this will move into a hand recount before the results are officially certified. I just fail to see how there's going to be a swing of 51 votes. So we also need to have a conversation about, and I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but about how the hunt for curing ballots went. We know that Democrats just have a better ground game than the Republican Party does. And, you know, you can send out volunteers, you know, the addresses of the voters who have issues with their ballot, usually an issue related to leaving a signature off or a signature that's not matching up. And so Democrats go down and they hunt down those voters in blue areas where it's more likely that the voter voted for the person who, in this case, Dave Up the Grove, they wanted to increase votes for. And then Republicans, you know, go into conservative areas and try to track down voters who need to cure their ballot. So that process is done. So at the end of the day, we'll see how many kind of Republican ballots got cured versus Democratic ballots got cured and sort of whether there were any shortfalls there. But volunteering for that kind of stuff matters. Tracking your ballot matters to make sure you can do it all online that, hey, my vote was counted. But at the end of the day, 51 votes that could have, you know, had a, if, and I'm not saying that Jamie Herrera Butler is going to lose. I think that she has every opportunity in the world to beat Dave Up the Grove in November, although we know it's very difficult for Republicans to win statewide office here. But she has great name recognition. She's very independent-minded. She voted to impeach Donald Trump, which didn't ingratiate her to a certain segment of the Republican base, but that makes it harder to label her as some sort of extremist. So she certainly has a chance, but it would have been much easier for her to win if she was going against Sukhil Peterson than it would going against a Democrat. So that's just the reality of the situation. I had to, in our daily subscriber show poll on Locals, Patreon, and X, I had to ask the question, how many of you voted in the Commissioner of Public Lands race? Because, I mean, I have faith in you guys. Obviously, you watch this show. I know you're out there casting your ballots, but I thought, oh, God, what if we do that poll and the number of people who say no is like 52? I would just quit. I would quit. That's not the case, though. Across all the platforms, only two people out of hundreds who've taken the poll this morning, and I just dropped it a half hour ago, so more people will vote, but say they did not vote in the race at all.
Huh.
And of course, you know, there are a lot of people who probably didn't vote for either Sue or Dave, so whether they voted or not, it's not contributing directly to this issue with the 51 vote gap. Now, I can't see who voted no. I don't know if you guys knew that. I can't actually see what your votes are individually, only collectively. If I knew who the two were, I'd call you personally or I'd stop by your house. No, I'm kidding. But I'm glad our subscribers. I mean, still it's two. I don't like to see that. Every vote counts. But this was a huge opportunity. And look, you know, Democrats made a mistake by running three fairly well-known candidates, really kind of four, and they could have paid the price for that. I don't think that they will end up paying the price for that, and so it'll likely be Jamie Herrera Butler and Dave Up the Grove in November, but we'll see. Maybe ballot counting went awry in a county, and we're going to see something different.
Maybe they'll find some missing
ones. Well, you already know that if they find missing ones, it's not going to be for Sukhil Peterson. So, wow, am I an election denier? I'm just saying, I don't think people are all worried about hand ballots or whatever, but 51 would be a pretty big swing. I think that would be concerning for folks. But hand count territory nonetheless. All right, our show is going to take a turn now to turn for the worse in terms of the subject matter. Gosh, this story is just breaking my heart today. Oh, I watched Como, their story on this. What is wrong? Society's broken. I mean, especially, we don't know who the suspect is yet. I have a guess in my mind as to age, etc. I don't know what's wrong with our society. Some of the horrific crimes that are committed against the most innocent and vulnerable people. You know, I'm reminded of the string of attacks on elderly Asian Americans, you know, who were robbed sometimes at the doorstep of their home, were seen as vulnerable targets. And now we have a story out of South Seattle about an 80-year-old woman, a dog walker, who was killed during a carjacking in Madison Valley. According to Como News, the police said the victim was a dog walker who had several dogs in the vehicle when she was carjacked and killed. Investigators said the woman was dragged by the vehicle as the suspect was fleeing. SPD spokesperson Eric Munoz told Como, during the carjacking and struggle, she was struck by her own vehicle and she landed in the street and she did pass away. 80 years old, dog walker, targeted in the middle of the day, thrown out of her vehicle into the street, hit by her own vehicle, and dies in the street after 80 years on this planet. That's about as cold and callous as you can get toward another human being. Como News did speak to not only someone in the neighborhood, but also a friend of this elderly woman.
It just goes part and parcel for the kind of anarchy we have in Seattle now.
How can you murder a dog walker? How can you murder a beloved dog walker? I mean, what is wrong with you? You know, why do you do those things? An 80-year-old woman, you know, with six dogs in the car? Really? How can you do that?
Yeah. What that guy said at the beginning, I guess I'm kind of surprised by hearing a Seattle resident make that acknowledgement that this is because of the anarchy that we've allowed. But if he lives in that neighborhood in South Seattle, man, I don't know how you could describe it as anything other than anarchy down there, certainly with some of the gang violence that we have seen. Frankly, a lot of crimes committed by young black men. And as a society, we have decided to treat those crimes as a symptom of guns as opposed to a symptom of other things and really deal with the underlying reasons. Again, the only description SPD put out about the suspect was it was an adult male. So I don't know if they were masked or whatever it was, because there were plenty of witnesses nearby. So I don't know the age or anything like that. But certainly there has been a lot of crime in these neighborhoods. I mean, downtown Seattle, Chinatown International District, South Seattle, these are really areas of the city where it has been anarchy. And good for that resident for seeing it. It's just sad that, you know, it's an 80-year-old woman who has to pay the price for the kinds of policies and politics and soft on crime and hate the police and police defunding and, you know, take it easy on juvenile offenders approach that Seattle has had for so long. Secondary, of course, to the loss of this 80-year-old woman, I know that there are going to be people who have questions about the dogs. According to Como News, the owners of one of the dogs that was in the car told Como the animal was located approximately a mile away from the carjacking scene. Just after 3 p.m., police responded to a report from Seattle Animal Control that a dead dog was found at Brighton Playfield inside a garbage can. And that is also where the vehicle that was stolen from this 80-year-old woman was located as well at the park. So not only did this person pull an 80-year-old woman out of her car in broad daylight, hit her with her own car, leave her there to die, but one of the dogs was also murdered and discarded in a trash can at a park. Society's broken. I mean, absolutely broken. And we'll wait until we have more information about this suspect, but I'll venture a guess that this is not the first time this suspect has committed a crime. You don't go from committing no crimes to murdering in cold blood an elderly woman and killing a dog and throwing it in a garbage can. And I'm sure that, you know, there'll be conversations about, oh, you know, it's gun issues or whatever it is. And it's like, man, how many times do we have to have this conversation? First of all, there's no consequences. You know, I'm venturing to guess it's a young person. No consequences at all. You know, we have Democrats in power who want to talk about closing the youth jail at a time when there's more violent youth crime than we've ever had before, where there's more incidents of shots fired than we've had before. And they just don't want to take it seriously. They don't want to look at some of the underlying problems. And yes, I am talking about economic problems. I'm talking about problems in the household. But at the very core, we have a society that has said that there aren't consequences for these things. And that when, you know, young people act up in a criminal way, that somehow it's the system doing that to them, that they're not accountable for their own behavior. So I hope that this is, I would say, I hope it's a wake-up call, but it's not going to be. I mean, we've seen, look at Ina Kwan. I mean, we thought Ina Kwan would be a wake-up call. The pregnant woman who was murdered in cold blood sitting in a vehicle at a red light with her husband, business owners in downtown Seattle, where a mentally ill man opened fire inside their vehicle and murdered her and her baby. And that felt like at the time, this has got to be it, right? This has got to be it. This has to be the wake-up call that we've all been waiting for, the rock bottom of public safety in the city of Seattle, where we realize, like, we cannot continue to allow this criminal element that hurts people over and over and over and shows signs of mental illness or shows signs of a complete lack of regard for human life. But that wasn't it. You know, the Seattle powers that be forgot about Ina Kwan pretty damn quickly. And now we have this 80-year-old woman, dog walker, murdered in broad daylight, dog left in a garbage bin. The hell is wrong with these people? It's truly devastating. And I don't know what it's going to take to fix it. You know, and then we got freaking Bob Ferguson. I hate to make it political, but it is political. Frankly, it is freaking political. And then you've got someone like Bob Ferguson, who's the state's chief law enforcer for 12 years, doesn't give a damn about public safety. And now he gets to run on a public safety platform. No one in the media says jack shit about it. No one wants to call him out on it. Voters are blissfully unaware about it and saying, yeah, I want the same guy who was the state's chief law enforcer for 12 years, who didn't give a damn about public safety, didn't stand up for police in 2020, didn't speak out about police defunding, like treats all of these things like a gun issue. That's the guy who's been in charge of like law and order for the state of Washington for 12 years. Let's vote for him. Like let's give him a promotion. Wild stuff. My mind will never understand it. I guess the only thing I can that I can even like hope explains it is like apathy. Is people who are focused on their lives and their families and all these things, and they just aren't watching the news. And I don't know that I blame them for that. I mean, I wish everybody was focused on what's happening around them in their neighborhoods and their communities and their state. But hell, I'm jealous. If you can go about your life you can have your job, raise your kids, do all of that, not be concerned with this utter bullshit, then, like, I bet your mental health is better than mine. 100%. And vote for Bob Ferguson. For the love of God. It's just insane. All right. I'm going to talk about Bob Ferguson again coming up next. I should give people a warning. I'll give it here. We need a little ad to put in, kind of a weird place for it. But I have talked about, in fact, I was at Freedom Fest this last Saturday. I saw a woman who I hadn't seen since the Freedom Fest last year. So it'd been a year, right? And I look at her, I'm like, holy smokes, you look good. I mean, she looked wonderful. And she like whispered, she's like, oh, I did Eastside Weight Loss and I'm down 36 pounds. And like, we gave each other a big hug and took a picture so we could compare it to the picture we took the year before. But man, so just between the two of us, down 76 pounds with Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. So I love hearing those stories. I've lost 40 pounds on the program, feeling great. And one of the other things she told me is, I feel like I can really keep it off of this program. And I've been able to keep it off. And you have, you know, ups and downs, small ones where you're like, oh, I'm going on vacation. I'm just going to just do what I want. I'm going to eat what I want. I'm going to drink what I want. And I've certainly done that in the last 2 years. And you get back from vacation, you're feeling a little lethargic, but this is the program where you just jump right back on. Week or two of the program, you're like, I feel great. And so I just love hearing those success stories. So do what I did, what so many others have done, schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. That's EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, I'm not letting this scandal go. I'm not letting it go. We're going to talk about it every day on the show this week. I am sure we will talk about it on the show next week because I am so sick of having one of the most powerful politicians in Washington State be allowed to get away with such corrupt, such scandalous, such dishonest behavior. Bob Ferguson sitting here like all happy, completely weathering three scandals that should have taken down his gubernatorial campaign. But they're not because the media has no interest in holding him accountable for anything. So what are you supposed to freaking do? Why do you think that Bob Ferguson is pulling ahead of Dave Reichert? It's not because he'd be better for the job. It's not because he's done such a bang-up job for the last 12 years. It's because when he has epic failures of leadership, the media's like, well, nothing to see here, folks. It's wild. So no, we're not going to let this one go because this is disgusting. It is a disgusting lie that Bob Ferguson has spun to the people who he serves now and the people he wants to continue to serve as governor. And that is the absolute lie that he is somehow working and has been working to keep our communities safe and to keep them safe from sex predators. And the truth could not be further from that. We've been talking on the show about the Seattle Times expose that looked at how the state of Washington and the Attorney General's office under Bob Ferguson has been quietly releasing sex offenders from McNeil Island into our communities. Now, the Seattle Times didn't bother to point out the fact in this article, they didn't even mention Bob Ferguson, and they didn't bother to point out that for the last couple months on the campaign trail, he's been touting his work protecting communities from sex offenders and keeping them on McNeil Island. Which just isn't true. Yes, are some still on McNeil Island? Sure. But when he says that, oh, I've kept nearly 100 of the most violent sex predators out of our communities. When he says that, he leaves out the fact that they've quietly released more of them than they have kept there. That there are more people released from McNeil Island and civil commitment than there are remaining on the island. And he conveniently leaves out the fact that some Democrats want to close McNeil Island altogether. And man, it makes it a much easier argument to close McNeil Island if you've been quietly letting people off McNeil Island to make it look like, oh, we don't even have that many sex predators left on McNeil. So just incredibly dishonest. And so, first of all, let me apologize to you for the graphic nature of the segments on this week. We'd give a warning beforehand because talking about child sex abuse, talking about rape, talking about predators is always dark. It's never easy. No one wants to hear it. No one wants to hear those details and have those details stuck in their head. But I have to tell the details to you. I have to share the details with you because I want people to know just how grotesque it is for Bob Ferguson on the campaign trail as governor to say he's protecting communities from these sex predators while he is quietly allowing some of the worst of them to be released. People who have done unthinkable, unimaginable things that if they're living down the street from you, you have every freaking right to know. And you have every right to know the role the Attorney General and the Attorney General's office played in allowing them to get off McNeil Island. So we're going to share a story with you today about a woman named Laura F. McCollum. McCollum is now about 66 years old, and she is living in Spokane. She's been living in Spokane on unconditional release since 2020, about the onset of the pandemic, a few months into the pandemic. Laura McCollum is an interesting case. She's a despicable person, but she is only the second woman in the United States to be given the classification as a sexually violent predator. And she is the first woman to ever be civilly committed to McNeil Island. So I want to go through a story from the Spokesman Review for you. The headline, Washington's First Female Sexually Violent Predator Released to Spokane. This article was written May 3rd of 2020. So as I said, Laura McCollum was released to Spokane unconditionally, no conditions, from McNeil Island in late April of 2020. So remember what was happening in late April of 2020. The world was completely chaotic. The pandemic was happening. The Spokesman Review did this story, but man, people were really distracted at the time, understandably so. So there may be many of you who are hearing this story of Laura McCollum and the horrors that she perpetrated and the story of her release for the first time. So Laura McCollum was convicted of raping a Tacoma infant in 1990, an infant in Tacoma in 1990. But she has also said that she had many other victims that she was never charged and tried for abusing. Police arrested McCollum, this from the Spokesman Review, in March of 1990 after she admitted to her therapist that she had repeatedly sexually abused an infant girl she was babysitting in Tacoma during the latter half of the 1980s. The girl was between 18 months and 3 years old during the abuse. After McCollum's initial 68-month prison sentence, a Pierce County judge determined she was a sexually violent predator and had her civilly committed in 1997. During treatment, she admitted to abusing 14 children as an adult, often by targeting single mothers and parents who abused drugs. She also reported victimizing more than 100 other children when she was a child herself in the foster care system. So as far as sex predators go, this is as despicable as you get. Sexually abusing an infant and admittedly sexually abusing many more. Preying on the children of drug abusers and single parents. It's as disgusting as you get. So she landed where the other disgusting, irredeemable sex predators land, on McNeil Island. So how the hell did she get off McNeil Island? I'll continue to read from the Spokesman Review. So despite everything she had done, everything she admitted to doing in therapy that, again, she was never convicted of, she was given supervised release into the city of Lakewood from McNeil in the summer of 2019. So what we're talking about here is going to be about 8 months before she actually got released to Spokane. She got released to Lakewood, except it didn't go well because it was very clear she was still a predator. So she ended up being returned in 2019 to McNeil Island not once but twice. From the Spokesman Review, McCollum began her transition back into society in June of 2019 when she was released to an apartment in Lakewood under strict supervision. But in July of that year, McCollum reported noticing a girl around age 6 in her neighborhood, who she then began watching from her porch and through windows. She said she fantasized about having sex with the girl. So McCollum was arrested in July of 2019. Again, it had just been a month since she'd been granted strict supervised release in Lakewood. Couldn't even last a month. So she was arrested in July of 18, returned to McNeil Island due to concerns about the child, the six-year-old she was watching and thinking about having sex with, and other minor violations of her release conditions. And then again, mid-October, despite all of that, she was once again released to Lakewood. And then, in January of 2020, she was returned again to McNeil Island after she violated her release conditions. The psychologist who interviewed McCollum, according to the Spokesman Review, in February of 2020, ahead of her trial for release, determined she still suffered from pedophilic disorder, but could not say with certainty that she was likely to abuse a child again. He wrote, there was no evidence that McCollum experienced a major lapse when watching that six-year-old child in June, and she showed progress by not becoming physically aroused. Despite the fact she admitted she was fantasizing about having sex with the six-year-old girl in Lakewood she was watching out her window. So because of that, the Washington Attorney General's office under Bob Ferguson petitioned the Pierce County Superior Court to dismiss her sexually violent predator classification in March of 2020 because multiple mental health experts could not prove she was likely to reoffend. So she was given unconditional release. Again, that timeline. 2019, she's given strict supervision. Released to Lakewood under strict supervision. She still sits on her porch and looks out her window and sees a six-year-old girl in the neighborhood and fantasizes about having sex with her. So she gets back after less than a month on strict supervised release. She's back to McNeil Island. They try again for some ungodly reason in October, release her again to Lakewood. Again, it doesn't work out. Within a matter of 4 months, she's sent back to McNeil Island. And then she has a trial to say whether she should continue to be considered a sexually violent predator and be civilly committed at McNeil. And a therapist says, well, she showed progress because she didn't get sexually aroused when she looked at the six-year-old. She just thought of having sex with her. So the Attorney General's office under Bob Ferguson says, hey, those strict supervised releases in Lakewood that didn't work out, no big deal. Let's give her unsupervised release, unconditional release into the city of Spokane. And to the best of our knowledge, that's where McCullough is today. Now, there's an author who wrote a book about her. Had interviewed her many times for the book. The book is called Laura and Me. It's a book by Sylvia Peterson. So when the Spokesman Review did a story basically to let Spokane residents know, like, hey, this violent predator named Laura McCollum, she's about to be living near you. They interviewed the author of this book. And no surprise, Sylvia Peterson was very worried for the community. Having interviewed this woman many times, knowing her better than perhaps anyone. Sylvia Peterson was quoted in the Spokesman Review article. It says, the court's decision to release McCollum was a shock to Sylvia Peterson, who believes she should never have been released after numerous interviews with the sex offender that informed her 2014 book, Laura and Me. She told the Spokesman Review, that is still my opinion. She referred to the fact that on supervised release after a month, McCollum was staring at this six-year-old girl, thinking about having sex with her. Peterson said, that's a dangerous pedophile. If she would do that under strict conditions, she would certainly do that under no conditions. Peterson said she thinks it's not a matter of if she reoffends, but when. Quote, unfortunately, there's going to be at least one more victim between now and then. People don't look at a woman and think she's going to molest their children. So again, I want you to think about Bob Ferguson multiple times over the last month, praising his own work in protecting communities from sexually violent predators and keeping them on McNeil Island, while completely keeping you in the dark about the very dangerous sex predators like McCollum, who his office have sought unconditional release for. A woman who raped babies. A woman who twice showed that she couldn't even be successful under strict supervision. And then just like that, while the rest of us are distracted with the pandemic, she's given unconditional release into the city of Spokane. It is disgusting for Bob Ferguson to hold up his record on sex offenders and McNeil Island as something to be proud of. And this is typical of campaigns, right? They focus on good things they've done, or in this case, just his job. It's the job of the Attorney General's office to fight for or against civil commitment. So sure, have there been instances where Attorney General Bob Ferguson's office has successfully petitioned to keep a predator on McNeil Island? Yes. He touts those, fine. But he does not acknowledge that they have been quietly, at a rapid pace, under his tenure as Attorney General, been releasing many of the worst of the worst sexually violent predators into communities unconditionally. He's giving you half the story at best on such a disgusting, horrible, critical topic. And the media just lets him freaking do it. How could you ever trust a media outlet that isn't covering this story through the lens of Bob Ferguson? Tell me that. The Seattle Times does this massive expose, doesn't even mention him by name once, doesn't talk about people like McCollum, who A.G. Ferguson's office petitioned to have unconditional release during the pandemic. It's beyond disgusting. It goes beyond the normal lies and lies of omission that we hear from political candidates and ignorance from the media or laziness from the media. We're talking about someone who's raped babies, who the AG's office says, yep, kick him to Spokane, unconditional. And we're just going to ignore that. And that's like the guy who is winning in the polls to be the next governor. Holy shit. Holy shit. Sorry. That's insane. That's mental. That's mental. He doesn't belong in the AG's office if he can't acknowledge some of this is happening. And he certainly doesn't belong in the governor's office. And I've said it a million times. I know. I can envision this happening at the first debate between Dave Reichert and Bob Ferguson, where he's called out for this. I guarantee what he's going to say. Oh, you don't value the Constitution and someone's constitutional liberties? I thought that's what Republicans were all about. I can't keep them there if a therapist doesn't say that they might reoffend. Well, first of all, the state needs better therapists to look at this. Because she literally, after a month of supervised release, admitted to looking at a six-year-old girl repeatedly out her window and fantasizing about having sex with her. And you don't think, therapist, that that shows that she's a risk to reoffend? What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? And to Bob Ferguson, I guarantee that's the argument he'll make. Constitutional rights, can't hold them there, can't hold them there. Interesting how the only time you care about preserving our constitutional rights is when you're fighting for sex offenders. Weirdo. Insane stuff. Horrible stuff. Disgusting stuff. Tell the truth, Bob Ferguson. And if you won't, I pray to God the media will ask you the questions that need to be asked about this. Wild stuff. It angers me more than any other issue that has come up with that man. And we are not letting it go. All right, we're going to get to our segment. Oh, swear jar. I'm sorry. I'm not even sorry. I'm not even sorry today. I'm not even sorry. I'll put money in the swear jar later.
Listeners got you.
Thank you. I need a deep breath after that one. I need deep breath and water. It just drives me nuts. It's the most disgusting, rightly despicable so. Lie. It's like it's such a half truth. Like the job of your office routinely is to do this stuff and keep them on the island. That doesn't mean everyone's going to stay on the island. Some people might have successfully been treated, and yeah, I believe they have constitutional rights. You know, we can sit here and have an argument about whether sex offenders should be put to death. Mm-hmm. I think if you rape a baby, you should be put to death. Not a big fan of capital punishment, but yeah, I think that that's appropriate. But that's not the reality we're living in. We don't put anyone to death in Washington State.
I don't know how you prove somebody's going to reoffend. That's ridiculous.
Unless they tell you, yeah, I'll probably rape a kid when I get out. I mean, this episode's going to be demonetized, going to be taken down because the AI bots are going to hear all this, but that's fine. It needs to be said.
But how do you prove that? And then also, they don't have it that bad on that island. I've heard that they get whatever they want over there. They just make a request and they get all this stuff and we pay for it and it's fine. So give me a break.
Yeah, they're lucky to be alive, frankly. So it's just for Bob Ferguson, and we can't let this one go. I refuse to let it go. I don't care if we have to do a story on it every freaking day until the media actually does its job. Like, it is not a big leap for the Seattle Times to also add, and Bob Ferguson saying this on the campaign trail. Mm-hmm. Like,
the 1 in 4 that reoffend, too. So he's fighting to get them out, and 1 in 4 are reoffending.
So, you're right. And so that shows, maybe it does show, that whatever they're doing to treat these pedophiles on McNeil Island isn't working, or maybe you can't treat a pedophile. That's why we have McNeil Island in the first place. Mm-hmm. That's why we have civil commitment in the first place. Because somebody who would rape a baby is automatically irredeemable. You don't come back from that. You don't all of a sudden one day wake up and say, I'm not interested in doing that anymore. So Bob Ferguson, I'm genuinely disgusted by you. Genuinely disgusted that you would repeatedly on the campaign trail, on social media, tell communities you're protecting them from these people. You're not protecting them from these people. Maybe a few of them that were easy, like, yeah, they're telling the therapist they'll absolutely commit a sex offense again. Wow, what an easy case. But the lady who twice in a year violated conditions of her release, even under strict supervision, was looking at a six-year-old girl, somebody's little girl, somebody's child in Lakewood, out the window thinking about having sex with them. That's not enough to keep that person on McNeil. You don't want to say anything about that on the campaign trail, and you don't have to. You don't have to because the media's not going to ask you about it. Because they have utterly failed us. They have failed us. And I go back to the 80-year-old woman. Lives 80 freaking years on this planet. Dragged to her death, hit with her own car, one of her dogs that she was watching dumped in a garbage can. That's Bob Ferguson's Washington State. That's the environment he's allowed to fester. When he, as one of the most influential Democrats in a state run by Democrats, didn't have the backbone or didn't care or didn't want to speak up in favor of law and order as it was deteriorating over the last decade, didn't want to say about police, defunding, standing up for the police, and now he wants to say, I'm the law and order candidate. I have a plan to hire more police officers. You don't have a plan that's worth jack. Because no one wanna works for you, you absolute coward. Man, we have to do everything we can. I have never been more fired up about Bob Ferguson. Again, like I said the show a couple months ago. Sorry, I'm gonna move on in a second. I said the show a few months ago, like, I don't think he's a bad person. I've met him, I've interviewed him many times, I've met his wife, I'm sure he's a great dad and a great husband. It's hard for me to square that now. Like, he has daughters, right? So it's hard for me to square the father of daughters who wants to brag that he's protecting communities from pedophiles who target young women when he's not doing that at all. At the very least, it's hit and miss. He's not doing it more often than not. They're not able to successfully keep these predators on the island. So I'm having a really hard time with the good person thing right now. So, all right, we're going to get to our segment Unbelievable coming up next. California offering zero down, no payment home loans for undocumented immigrants. That from our friends at the Center Square. First, we've talked a lot about if you're going to sell your home and if something interesting might happen with interest rates coming up soon. We'll have that news in national. But we've told you, you know, check out a few real estate agents if you're looking to sell your home, but don't choose one until you've talked to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. That's what Sharona Rhodes and her husband did when they went to sell their home. They checked out a few. They ended up going with Wes. He fronted them $10,000 to help with repairs that were necessary to get the price they wanted for their home. And that was a scary thing, though, because you have to pay that money back on the back end. And so she's like, gosh, will it sell for enough that $10,000 he put into it was worth it?
It was a little scary, but he sent us weekly, I think, reports on how home sales were going in our area. So we knew we were on the right track. And so, you know, my husband and I are not big on debt.
Good.
But, you know, we had to be in debt to get the things done that we needed done. So it was just a lot of praying, like, Lord, just please let this happen. And then trusting that Wes knew exactly what he was talking about and that he would come through in the end, which he did.
Yep. He was able to get their home sold for over list price in just 6 days. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, as many Americans who've been paying into our tax system for years and years and years struggle to come up with the money to make a down payment to be homeowners in California, all you got to do is come across the southern border illegally, and they'll help you get into a home, zero down, no payments. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. So a little background. California has like a weird lottery system. It's part of their California Dream for All Shared Appreciation Loans program, where yes, even longtime California residents can qualify for help from the state for zero down, no payment home loans. So that already exists, right? But now there is this effort to pass a bill that would say, even if you are in the country illegally, you can benefit from this program. So this comes from our friends at the Center Square, California Division. California advances zero down, no payment loans, home loans for undocumented immigrants. AB 1840, which already passed the assembly and now faces a floor vote in the Senate, would prevent the state's California Dream for All Shared Appreciation Loans Program, what a dumb name too, California Dream for All Shared Appreciation Loans Program, from denying individuals on the basis of their immigration status. The program allows applications to secure loans of up to 20% of the home's purchase price, or about what a typical down payment is, with zero down payment on the state loan and no payments. The state's loan can potentially be repaid to the state when the home is refinanced, sold, or transferred, with the borrower paying back the original loan amount plus 20% of any increase in value on the property. But it's not clear what would happen if a family decided to hold on to the home, as there are no provisions on how long a property can be held for, which means certain kinds of trusts would potentially allow the loan to not be paid back. So basically, this is one of those situations where like zero down, zero payments. But if you refinance, if you sell the home, you've got to pay it back. And then if you make like, I mean, we know how home prices are here in California. If you make like $1 million on the home 20 years from now, you also have to give us 20% of the increased value of the home. But if you decide to keep your home and it just stays in the family, then like, congratulations, you got a nice fat gift from taxpayers to become a homeowner. So the change here again is like, oh, you could even be in this country illegally. You could be come across the border, a Tijuana, and you could say, I want the California dream, because apparently the California dream is for all, even those who aren't paying into the tax system that is funding the California dream. Doesn't really seem fair. And I've got to say this quote, I had to read it from bill author Assemblyman Joaquin Arambula, a Democrat from Fresno, is just par for the course. He says, the social and economic benefits of home ownership should be available to everyone. As such, the California Dream for All program should be available to all. When undocumented individuals are excluded from such programs, they miss out on a crucial method of securing financial security and personal stability for themselves and their families. Don't you think they made a decision to miss out on those things when they decided to cross the border illegally and come into this country, as opposed to go around the legal route that many, many people from many countries do, you know, the more difficult route? And don't you think that being here legally or on some sort of legal visa would give them more ability to secure financial security and personal stability? I don't imagine there's a lot of financial security and personal stability in living in a country illegally under the radar. You know what I'm saying? So like, I feel like they bear a lot of the responsibility for entering this country in a way that would not give them personal stability and financial security. And look, I'm going to get to this in national. It's this weird thing where like, how do I put this? We got born here because we're lucky. Like, I didn't do anything to be born an American. Like, I got lucky. That's awesome. Like, I won the lottery. Nicole didn't do anything to be born an American. Like, that was our ancestors. Like, good for us, right? So I feel bad for people who weren't as lucky. I feel bad for people because of, you know, the powers that be that decided you're going to be born in a poor third world country to poor parents who are struggling in a place. Like, I feel bad. I don't think I'm somehow automatically better or more deserving of a good life and a secure life and a stable life than someone who is born in the poorest places on earth. The wonderful thing about our country is we give people an opportunity to come here and be part of this. To just because you weren't born here doesn't mean you can't become an American, doesn't mean that you can't come here and contribute to our society and be part of it and grow and all these things. But there are so many people who do that the correct way, and there has to be order to it. There has to be order to it, or America won't be the greatest country on earth. or this won't be a place where people who had the unfortunate luck of being born in a third world country, it won't be a place that they can come for a better life anymore. So, you know, that's the thing I always go back to is like, yeah, I don't think I'm better because I'm an American. I just happen to be born here. I mean, lucky my parents didn't move to Canada because my dad was from Canada. My mom was here. Not that Canada is the worst place on earth either, but I'd be living under Justin Trudeau right now. But yeah, we have to acknowledge like this is dumb luck for us. Dumb luck that we get to be Americans. But unfortunately, this is the world that we're living in, and you can come here and we want you to come here and we want you to contribute. But the very best way for you to do that is the legal way. It's the best way for you. It's the best way for your family. And it's the most fair way for you to contribute to this wonderful country and to keep it wonderful for other people who want to come here too. All right. So anyway, zero down, no payment home loans. Unbelievable. All right, this weekend, happening this weekend. Oh my gosh, don't miss out. Natchez RV Resort is having their grand opening phase two this weekend. They've got 18 extra large RV lots starting at just $79,900. And that's the grand opening weekend pricing. So if you want that pricing, you need to get in touch with Natchez RV Resort and schedule an appointment now before this weekend. It's happening August 24th and 25th. So schedule that appointment now if you're even remotely interested. NatchezRVResort.com. Man, they have first-class amenities. I think calling it an RV resort really doesn't do it justice. I mean, they've got pickleball courts. They're finishing their pool. They've got a hot tub. They've got a gym. They've got showers, laundry, this beautiful 4,300 square foot clubhouse they just finished, gourmet kitchen in there, tons of place for you and your family to hang out and to have visitors hang out, etc. They've got a dog park. And it's just beautiful out there. I mean, there's a million things to do. Year-round events, 300 days of sunshine, hunting, snow skiing, golf, river rafting nearby, wine tasting nearby. You name it. So check them out, NatchezRVResort.com, NatchezRVResort.com, and don't miss out on Phase 2 grand opening pricing. This weekend, 18 extra large RV lots starting from just $79,900. And let me know if you buy a lot, which lot you get, because I'm going to start plotting where all our friends are in the lots. I already went out when Mike and I visited. An undivided subscriber had just bought one of the lots, so I went and checked on it for her. I took a picture and I'm like, your lot's here. It's ready for you. Nicole's aunt's out there. So we're just going to plot. And then when we visit, we'll just
bounce around,
go around place to place and get fed and be given booze. Feed us. Give us the wine.
Outdoor kitchen areas.
Oh, my gosh. It's beautiful. Indoor, outdoor fireplace. Really, I really, Mike and I are, we're this close to pulling the trigger on an RV.
Oh, I thought you were going to say on the RV lot.
Well, the RV, first comes the RV, then comes the lot.
I like it.
Only because, total sidetrack, sorry. I mean, he uses it for hunting and watershed.
Watershed,
we've been using
obviously
a friend's RV, which was very nice of him, but it's on its last leg, I think, is fair to say. Yep. So we need it for watershed. Mike and I bought that property. We don't have a place to, there's nothing on it. So we need a place to hang. So I went from being like, I don't want an RV to, yep. Mike's
one.
Changed me a lot. I think for the better.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it
like
just
in terms
changed
of my
you
hopes and desires.
Your, yeah.
Like made me focus on like, wow, I'm really off track right now. Just things that matter more. I think that's part of like just getting older too, right?
Growing up.
Where you kind of forget about the dumb stuff and it's like, you know, living in the country with some dogs and an RV, that sounds great.
Right.
Sometimes on weekends I tell them like, I want to just jet out to our property and throw a line in.
I think
like,
it's
who am I? You know?
it's a goal that you didn't have before.
Yeah.
Like I mean, I think I did say early on that my goal was early retirement. But
yeah.
But not a lot of people go, that's their goal.
Right.
But that's just because I like traveling.
Yeah.
Right? But I really think that once you're in this place where you have a solid career, then you're like, okay, what's next? Like now I need to look forward to where I'm going next.
Yeah, but it's just the chill
retirement.
Things I enjoy now.
Yeah.
Like I used to be like, oh, let's go out or let's go, you know, what, you know, have some sort of exciting adventure and travel. I still like that stuff.
That sounds exhausting.
But I would like a nap during the day.
Yes.
And then I want to go throw a line in and go fishing.
Yep.
And pet my dog.
Yep.
That's it. Like that's
look
a happy day for me.
Yep.
Anyway. NatchezRVResort.com.
I'm with you.
Okay. So not a good jobs report for Democrats. So this comes, and I'm sure you've heard the news. We'll dive into it a little bit. But Joe Biden gave a speech the first day of the DNC. And in his speech, which was, you know, littered with falsehoods, as every politician's speech is these days.
So angry.
Yeah. He bragged about jobs and how many jobs his administration has created. Here's a clip.
We've gone from economic crisis to the strongest economy in the entire world. Record 60 million new jobs. Record small business growth. Record high stock market. Record high 401ks. Wages up. Inflation down, way down, and continuing to go down.
Yeah, except the current employment statistics for March of 2024 just got revised downward, 818,000 jobs. Yeah, that's not good. It's the largest downward revision in history, I think I read. So 818,000. Let's see where some of the biggest losses were. Retail trade, not a surprise there. Professional and business services. So like businesses, 358,000 jobs. Does that scream like a roaring economy to you? Leisure and hospitality, 150,000. So that tells me right there, people don't have expendable income. They're hurting financially. They're not traveling. They're not going out. 150,000 jobs lost in that sector. Nicole, we were looking at this and she pointed out one of the only sectors to gain jobs, 87,000 jobs in the revision, private education and health services. Yeah, that sounds about right. Private education is going gangbusters because public education sucks so bad. Construction down 45,000. Manufacturing down 115,000. Hasn't he bragged about all the manufacturing jobs he created? So this is...
In that speech, he bragged about 800,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. Minus 115,000 right on that. So that's where the jobs downward revision is. Here's how they talked about it on CNN.
Some of the forecasters had been saying probably around... few hundred thousand jobs. Goldman Sachs had said maybe up to a million. So this is on the higher end. Not a massive reaction from the market. I think that's in part because this is somewhat backwards looking data. What investors really care about is what happens next. And these numbers out today, they do support the idea that the jobs market has been weaker than we previously thought and that it has been slowing down. That makes sense because we know the Fed has been working hard to slow the economy down as it tries to fight inflation. So I do think that the fact that the economy had more than 800,000 fewer jobs than previously known supports the idea that the Fed is going to start cutting interest rates next month. The question still remains whether or not it's a quarter of a point or a larger interest rate cut. But either way, it's going to lower mortgage rates, credit card rates, and car loan rates.
Yeah, and the thing is, he says it's backward-looking data, which it is, right? Because they're revising the jobs report from March of 2024. But that's the data that Biden is pointing to when he says things are great. Things are going great. Look at the jobs report. And Kamala Harris has to speak this week at the DNC. And I'm sure that she's revising her speech, just like the jobs were revised. Because maybe she's not. Maybe she doesn't care and hopes people in the room don't realize. But this is significant. I will say tomorrow on the show, obviously, we have Zach Abraham with Bloor Capital on the show every Thursday. And so we're very much looking forward to asking him to explain to us, like we're 5 years old, how bad this is, what it means, what it's going to mean for rates, et cetera. So, could not come at a worse time for Democrats, and they can no longer claim. And we all knew this, right? We felt it. And that's the thing is, like, you can look at data and all of that, but you feel it. You feel it personally, you know, that whole leisure and hospitality segment, you know, fewer Americans traveling, so fewer jobs in that. So it's like this difference between people telling you the data says this. It's like Don Lemon. I was saying on the show yesterday, I couldn't play the clip because he put copywritten music on it, but him, you know, people saying, I'm voting for Trump because I just don't feel like my money is going as far as it did. And he's like, well, the data shows that's not true. He's like, sitting here talking to regular Americans, a millionaire, like you're not struggling as bad as you think you are, dumb. It's just so disconnected. So this reflects, I think, how a lot of people are feeling and how a lot of sectors are performing. But we'll ask the expert tomorrow. All right, I just have to play because I played when the Republican National Convention happened. I played Jim Walsh, the chair of the Republican Party, reading off the who their votes were going to go to. And so let's hear Shasti Conrad, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party, flanked by Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, doing the same at the DNC.
Washington, how do you cast your vote?
From the amber waves of grain and verdant origins of Eastern Washington to the iconic waters of the St. Lucie, Washington stands proud as a part of the Blue Walls. lucky 101 votes for Vice President Kamala Jamie Harris.
Very jazzed.
Wow. That's fun, though. Oh,
those always look fun to me.
I mean, it looks a little fun. Jayapal behind her
just
is
like
a
hanging
bit,
on her, right?
I mean, just hanging on her and like saying every word with her. It was a bit much.
It was a bit much. Yeah. But I was like, well, you know, people are excited. Fine. Be excited for your candidate. Jim Walsh, they were excited for, you know, for the Donald Trump votes. It's just an interesting thing. I do think there are some elements of, you know, the national conventions that are pretty fun and cool. And I like to see people involved. Now, I think Shasti Conrad is dangerous considering she wants to change our state constitution. What did she say? Clean it up?
Clean it up, you know, right.
Have fun, girlfriend.
But I do think that the energy is different coming from this one versus the Republican as far as outside. I mean, there's just more emphasis on what's going wrong outside of the convention than there is in the convention. I haven't seen a ton. I mean, of course, we've heard about Michelle Obama talking and we've heard about the big ones talking, Hillary, whatever. But I think I'm seeing more of what's going on outside and how angry people are outside than I am inside.
Yeah, but well, they're like burning American flags like outside. And
I love the guy that ran up and grabbed it out, put it out.
They always do that. Sorry, if I see an American flag burning, I'm probably going to leave it because I don't want to get burns on my hands. So I'm not that brave. I am patriotic, but I'm not that brave.
Well, I mean, he almost got beat up after that, too.
That too. That's a little element of it. Okay, we'll get to comments in our closing sanity check next. First, I mentioned Zach Abraham was going to join us tomorrow, help us make sense of that revision in the jobs and what might come after that. But Zach Abraham, you know, they focus on, first of all, they are laser focused. That man knows everything that's going on in the news with the economy, with things like the jobs report. He can explain it to you well. And Zach was the chief investment officer at Bulwark Capital. They specialize in managing risk. They're looking at the totality of the circumstances, totality of the economy, like jobs, et cetera, when they're deciding what to do with your portfolio. And managing risk is their number one focus. Their goal is to lower risk, because you can never eliminate it, right? Lower cost, give you as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement, which is exactly why you need Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital in your corner. Let them show you how their risk management strategy can protect that retirement you've worked so hard for. Learn about their strategy with the free Common Sense Investing Guide. Get yours by going to knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. Oh, we did get quite a few. Did I swear that much? Yep, I think I did.
Maybe more than any other show.
You know, it's just, it's unbelievable to me.
It is.
I need to start saying Jack instead of S-H-I-T, though.
Oh.
Jack. B-S.
There
just
you go,
B-S. Bill B has the $20 super chat. Regarding the DNC, even with the enormous help of the mainstream media, I'm failing to see the joy of what can be unburdened by what has been. Maybe more enlightenment is forthcoming. Yeah, Joe Biden's speech didn't really scream joy. But you know what I'm also really sick of on both sides? This like obsession over, oh, crowd sizes. Oh, there's some empty seats here. Oh, these bleachers are empty. And they both do it to each other. And it's like, look, they're both bringing in some pretty nice size crowds. Can we focus on more important things? It's just embarrassing. Old Sub Sailor, $10 super chat. I'm still good with Dem men getting vasectomies. The free vasectomy clinic outside the DNC. Son Miller, $10 super chat. Truth. Country Guy, $10 super chat. Swear jar contribution. Speak your heart. Jenny Wagner, $20 super chat. Rick Eckert, $10 super chat for the swear jar because we don't want Brandy tamping down the fire. You can't put that fire out. Anna M, will there be yard signs for the initiatives there? I want one for my home. Yes, I will make sure that there are yard signs for the initiatives there. I'm just promising that without talking to anybody, but I will make some phone calls. And if I have to bring yard signs for the initiatives personally, I will do just that. Mike and I got rid of all of ours.
You had a lot. We left Freedom Fest with a lot.
Probably like, 30.
Yes.
Yeah. So we put them up around our hood, and then we gave some to some people to put up. And so, we're gone. We're out. We're fresh out.
Love it.
So, yeah, I will. If I have to pick them up and bring them personally, I will bring them down to Toledo this weekend. Nicole, remind me.
Okay.
Okay. Mary Christie, I really dislike Jamie, but I will hold my nose once again to vote for the rhino. Good for you, Mary Christie, because remember what we saw. 51 votes can make a huge difference. And hell, I'd rather have those 51 votes go to someone who you don't particularly love but are willing to vote for.
And also, rhino. Can we just come up with a better term? It's
like Jamie's been a conservative for a long time. She might not be your brand of conservative, but that doesn't mean she's not a conservative. I would say I'm a conservative. There's a lot of things I'm liberal on, but I'm far more conservative than liberal. And I'm not even a rhino because I'm not a Republican. But so it's this is like nobody has this, you know, monopoly on what it means to be a conservative. And that's to me, that's a very liberal mentality is like, oh, you're not a Democrat. You know, like they do to Mark Mullett. Like, no, he's a fake Democrat or corporate Democrat or whatever it is. So come on. Like, let's just agree that, hey, there are a lot of different brands of conservatism and types of conservatives. And if they have more in common with you than not, like they're on your team, man. They're on your team, Mary. Lieutenant Dan says, too bad this state will do more to protect child predators than everyday civilians. Yep. I can't wait for Bob Ferguson to use the constitutional argument. Oh, well, they have constitutional rights. While he erodes our Second Amendment constitutional rights after he introduced a bill or supported a bill that would have criminalized wrong speak on elections. Like, only supports constitutional rights for the sex offenders. Make sure
Dave has that in his back pocket.
Yep. Crafty Grandma Crispy, this is the result of DEI, where you don't have qualified people making decisions that negatively affect the general population. I'm assuming that's for the California story.
I think that was directed at Ferguson for some reason, but I don't know. That's just where it lied. That's where I found it in the comment.
Tara Matheson, you can't fix them no more than you can fix someone who's gay. It's what they desire, period. Yeah, and I have a hard time. Yeah, like that's kind of similar, right? It's like, what did they put conversion therapy
right
for gay people? It's like, no, they're gay. Like, you're not going to be able to convert them to be straight. And I don't like the comparison between pedophilia and being gay. Those are two totally different things. So let me be clear on that. But yeah, when it comes to being a sex offender, as I said earlier, if you have some sort of appetite for children, I'm sorry, there's no therapist who's going to get that out of you. But let me be clear. I don't like the whole comparison, being gay it's not in the same sentence.
And I do believe what Crafty Grandma was talking about was the therapist.
Oh,
and gotcha. That was the result. So you have these people in high power positions making these decisions, and she thinks they
might. Yeah. Chris, of course, they just magically found votes for the Democrat. Never fails. You said
last night. I mean,
we'll see what the recount does.
There's just a few votes left, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. Wonder where they found them.
Interesting. No, I trust the process. We'll see how the hand recount goes. Maybe there was some issue somewhere.
It's worth investigating.
It is always worth investigating, but you have to come at me with some sort of evidence, like mathematically, of something that doesn't add up, or else it's that cry wolf thing. Like, we had so much crying wolf over election interference bull, like from the Lauren Culp who lost by 500,000 votes. He's like, it was robbed from me. And then people don't listen to you. So like, I want tried and true, clear issues that can be investigated and looked into, and I want to ignore everything else and conjecture. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we're just making a joke, but that's how you get people to be like, they're crazy election deniers and not hear you out. It's the cry wolf thing. Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, hell yeah, look into that, see if there's anything fishy funky going on.
And that, I mean, that's why they do the recount, right?
Correct. So we'll see. Jokes are fine, but I just it worries me because I don't want cry wolf and then something serious happens and no one pays attention, because it's like, well, you guys have been screaming about that for years with no proof. All right, good comments per the usual. And with that, I'd like to end our show with our closing sanity check. It's going to be from the DMC, but let's get to our closing sanity check. So Michelle Obama and Barack Obama spoke at the DNC. Man, Barack Obama's a good orator. I'm going to give that to him. He really is. He really is. And being a good communicator is really important. Michelle Obama spoke. She had a line that's been talked a lot about, but I just want to give my thoughts on it. Here it is.
No one has a monopoly on what it means to be an American. No one.
Yeah, I don't think anyone thinks they have a monopoly on what it means to be American. You know, there's this idea that because some of us would like people to become an American in the right ways, that somehow, you know, we're racist, or, you know, we want to keep America pure, or whatever it is. And that's just an insane thing. I mean, America is this wonderful melting pot. It's always been a wonderful melting pot. But it's not anti-immigrant to say that we want immigrants to come here legally. So that's just ridiculous. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. A reminder, we are going to have that event down in Toledo this Saturday. I'll post the flyer for it all across my social media pages so you know the when, where, but we'd love to see you. So undividedpod.com. If you have not become a subscriber already, please do so. It's just $5 a month. It is really helpful for us. Especially during this critical election year where we've just got a million things going on and a million things to cover. So undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. We will see you back here on the live show tomorrow for our final live show of the week.